We're on the Shannon at Corbally, close to Thomond Bridge and not far from Limerick City. Pat Lycett is getting his small rib ready for sale.
Pat, we're literally going into the eye of the river. And I love the name of your boat, Eye of the River.
Like
it's great.
Pat loves this place. He grew up here, has been out on the Shannon almost every day of his life, and he's 81.
Wait, hang on.
This is his home and his element.
Pull the boat back.
Mm-hmm.
Pat makes a few last-minute adjustments.
Grab some life jackets.
And we're off. Pat Lycett knows how to read sky and water. He does what he can to protect and nurture the river birds, a large flock of which explodes into flight as the boat heads their way.
I reared all them grey-legged geese. Look at them over by the shore. Now, I introduced all those. I hatched them from eggs. And they bred. The last count I had was 400 knot. Now, I know that was only a fraction of it, I'd say, because they don't all stay here. They disperse.
Pat points the boat upstream and we cross the invisible line from Limerick just into Clare to visit an iconic engineering project, one of the most ambitious of its time when it was built 100 years ago.
Arnoch Rusha, power station. We're in the tail race. This is where the water is coming out from the headrest.
The massive hydroelectric power station at Ardna Crusha was built to harness the Shannon's power to make energy and light.
So we're looking at this power of water streaming down here. It's like this vast concrete fortress, really.
The plant was built in the 1920s by a German company. Over 5,000 people were employed at the height of the construction work, with machinery shipped in from Bremen and Hamburg and carried to the site on 76 steam locomotives on a specially built strip of narrow gauge railway from Limerick Docks.
I think, Pat, you sometimes find dead eel in the water here.
They're killed by the turbines. They come up here as elvers. They come up in their thousands when I was a kid.
You know, and when you'd find some, you know, dead eel in the water, what would you do with them, Pat?
I would give them to Will O'Connor,
like marine biologist,
scientist, whatever. I'm a nice fella, and he has a little rib, and he comes up taking photographs. But I was giving him the eels because he's mixed up with this eel foundation or something. You know, and they're trying to save these eels and all that jazz.
And would you come out of the water most days now?
I would. Winter and summer.
What's your favourite thing on the water?
It isn't talking anyway. God, I love it. It's my life now, like, you know what I mean? I go to the Caribbean. I have a daughter in the Caribbean. She's there about 30 years. And I'd be mad to get home.
Going to get home to Limerick and to the Shannon.
You're listening to The County Measure. I'm Vincent Woods. We're making a journey around Ireland 100 years after independence and partition to get a measure, to get many measures of all 32 counties. We're looking at place, landscape, and the people who shape their lives within these boundaries of community and county. In this series, I'm hoping to get a fresh understanding of each county and its people as we shape a radio atlas of Ireland. A lovely, bright, frosted morning in West Limerick, and come through Abbeyfeel, Adair, Newcastle West, those evocative names, those historic towns, and we're heading for Abbeyfeel on the very close to the border with Kerry. And of course, like many rural towns, one that has been impacted by
by change and dwindling population and all kinds of challenges, but the community there responding to that as well. And we're going to find out a little about how they have been responding and what that community has been doing in the face of change.
The fine old market town of Abbeyfeel links Limerick to Kerry. Tralee and Listowel are only a short distance away, and you hear the richness of the shared culture in every voice and note. And it's home to a lively and resilient community.
And here we are outside on Siopa Milseán, Mary's Sweet Memories, here on Main Street, in Abbeyfeel, and this is a community shop, and quite a unique one. Lovely spot.
Hello.
Hello.
Oh, this is for you, Mary.
And inside, we meet Mary Flynn.
Hello, Mary. How are you doing?
Nice to meet you.
Vincent, lovely to meet you.
Lovely to meet you, Vincent. Great to meet you. The hands are cold.
The shop is a delight, a lovely mix of old, modern and reimagined. Wooden counter and weighing scales, wooden shelves, newspaper stand, glass cases with displays of sweets and iconic brands of groceries.
Don't give that cold a chance. Take Aspro. Lovely little paper bag with logo on
all
it. Fantastic.
Things, so
the Twinings tea, wonderful Maxwell House coffee, old tins.
The Pond's cold cream. I suppose there wasn't a nana in the country that didn't use Pond's cold cream or those kind of things. And
Old Spice. Dab of Old Spice. Yeah. Went straight.
The little bags of blue, which we would always use when we'd be dissolving, whitewashing the cow houses and the farm, the outside buildings at home always. My granddad would always be out in nana with the white, with the blue, and to make sure it was all done properly, and that if there was visitors coming, if the Yanks were coming, or if there were stations in the house or anything, all the whitewashing and the cleaning was done, and oh my goodness, the place would be gleaming and shiny.
Beautiful, beautiful old stuff.
Now I'd introduce you to Noreen.
Noreen, how are you?
Vincent,
lovely to meet you.
Lovely to meet you as Great. Well.
Yeah. Noreen Cotter is one of the people who set up the shop.
There was another sweet shop in Abbeyfeel, and it was there for almost nearly 40 years. Like, I can remember it as a little girl, and that was a while ago. But that closed down, and then Abbeyfeel was kind of on its knees, really. You know, like a lot of rural towns, things were closing down and that. So two friends, Robert Brown and John Brown, they're both primary school teachers like myself, and they came to myself and my husband and they just said, could we do something for the community? So it kind of happened, I suppose, at the right time, really, because at the same time, my husband's uncle, Mike O'Donnell, he had a grocery shop down New Street, and that was established in 1920, but he had left everything, like all of these biscuit tins, the counter, the weighing scales, you know, and they were too precious to just let them get lost. So we decided, yeah, we'll open this place, we'll bring up all this old stuff. So it's kind of like, I suppose it's like a museum, but it's like a living museum. So I suppose what we've done is we've done it for the community, and we've done it to retain the heritage that's in the town as well. So it is a lovely sweet shop, and we've coffee and all of that, but it's about community, you know, and history.
Reflecting community and the past, but also looking to the future.
Yeah, because obviously you kind of have to make it some bit viable, and it's not easy. It's very difficult for small businesses now to. Yeah. There's just such competition and stuff, and you know, but people have been great. You know, they love it. Like, it is kind of a social.
I'm sure place. Children and families must love to come in here.
Yeah, they do. The kids love coming in because they love the sweets and all the rubbish that they can eat. The parents love it then because they come in and it just kind of takes them back. It's quite nostalgic. Yeah. So, you know, there's something for everybody.
It's a beautiful spot as well. I mean, it's a pleasure to come in and just look.
Yeah.
But mind you, it was good to buy as well.
And as we chat, many people do come in to look and buy.
This is Martina O'Connell now. She's just after walking in, and she is very much involved in the FLA by the Field Committee.
That is a very famous FLA and festival.
Well, it is. It's the only thing. It's the only festival we have here in Abbeyfeel, and it's run every bank holiday week, May bank holiday weekend. And we have a great concert on this year. We have the Mulcahy family.
I should know better.
Yeah. And they're from Ambassadors
of Liberty. Exactly, Abbey Field. Yeah. And they're brilliant.
Yeah, they are fantastic. So they're going to be playing during the weekend at the FLA. And we'll have great musicians from all over Ireland coming. And I have to say, we have great support from people that lived in Abbeyfield that are now have good businesses in American places. And they give us great support as well to help us run a good weekend. Yeah.
So they're good and loyal.
Because we are linking a lot more, you know, with America and place, people that are abroad now. You know, they kind of tune in to see what's
Abbeyfield
going on.
Abbeyfield becomes the world.
It does.
It's like that branch of the tree.
Limerick Greenway has been developed along the track of the old Limerick to Tralee railway line. 40 kilometres of walking and cycling track with starting points at Rathkeel, Ardagh, Templeglanton, Newcastle West, Abbeyfield. And at Barna we meet Aoife Keogh, where she and her husband set up and run Locomotion Bike Rental.
We go down this way here.
We make our way down a steep bank to step onto the greenway.
It's a little bit high from here down, and once you get onto the track, then it's level. And then the first place you meet is the Barna Tunnel.
So are we now walking on what was the railway track?
This was the railway track, the original railway track.
Lovely curve, you got that sense, you can imagine a train along here.
Yeah, and they would have been descending, or ascending, from Newcastle West all the ways up the hill that you drove up today. Mm-hmm. And they would have been coming here. So when they got to here, when they were building the track, they met this rock. So they had to chisel their way out of it.
Amazing, yeah. It's really steep each side. I mean, we're in a little valley, really. And you got that wonderful, the moss, all the greenery, the trees on the, against the skyline, all the ferns,
There's a lot of ferns. There is, yeah. It is quite wet. Yeah. I believe the ferns like the rain. So a lot of people have come out for biodiversity talks and walks. We've had a good few groups that would come from
icicles
schools
today.
Icicles and snowdrops, you could see either.
Yeah.
We have a lot of blackberries down here during the autumn season.
Lovely,
and there's wild strawberries and wild elderflower growing down here as well.
Look, there's a pair of them. Gorgeous.
They're nesting, and apparently there's a lot of species of bats that were living in here as well. Now there is lights that will come on now when we start walking through. They'll come on at the left hand side.
There they go.
So it's quite a long tunnel, and it's lovely to cycle and walk through this. The kids get a great kick out of these little recesses that are along the way then, where they would have been the areas that the workers on the railway would have stood into when the train is coming, so that they didn't get whacked by the train. Yeah, so you'd often, when we bring kids down, I'd be telling them all the history of the tunnel and that, and they'd be hiding inside there, frightening each other.
Really feels like walking in history, doesn't it?
So if you were travelling now for a lot of the day and you were coming down towards Kerry, isn't it a beautiful place to stop and get out and stretch your legs?
Yeah.
So up ahead on the right here now, you'll see the Barna railway station. So this station was active up until the 1970s, and also
beautiful
shows you...
Beautiful building. Isn't it lovely?
Isn't it gorgeous?
That cut stone and
stone.
Brick. It's lovely, that grey and white and that lovely red, the bricks. Something quite moving about it, about the idea that this, especially a railway line that had become derelict, really, the whole thing has been brought back to life, and that people walk on the track of this place that brought their ancestors to and fro.
And brought employment to the area. And I think, you know, if you can imagine the 1880s and onwards, it was bringing food, it was bringing sustenance to these rural areas where people didn't have access to, you know, the major shops and the major places to get their supplies. So it was a huge part of the history, and I think it's fitting now that it is here in a time where things are depleting in our rural towns. And I see these things like the greenways, it's like a rainbow of hope through little towns that is going to bring people back again. it's the past bringing us to the present and on into the future.
Fella that sees you born in Castletown, Connor, very well known in Newcastle West, to spend many a night with Kitty and Judy and Mary. With parents so beautiful for bees, dragon for spending my time.
Here at the edge of Newcastle West, this 13th century Desmond Castle, the grounds have been turned into this terrific community resource again, the Castle Domain, with walks and a lot of the sports grounds all around here. And can't help but remember the poet Michael Hartnett here in Newcastle West, one of our great poets, and how he loved this place and this town. Hello.
Hello.
Does this bring us back around to the Killina Moor entrance?
Cullna.
Oh, Cullna.
Oh,
yeah,
it does, yeah.
It does,
so obviously
sense.
You're not local.
No,
yes, where are you from?
well, we're in truth, we're making a radio programme called The County Measure for RTE.
Wow. I was on Off the Rails in 2003.
Good.
The oldest fella in America was getting married. And we wrote to RTE, the girls did.
Yeah.
We're in an awful state. Steve's going over to the eggs and all this. So we got called, and myself and my two daughters were dressed for the wedding. A black two-piece with a V-neck and a green shawl hand-knit by a lady in Limerick. And green, I still have the necklace, the green and the earrings and, you know.
Fantastic.
I was gorgeous,
you
yeah.
You looked $1 million.
Yeah. Yeah. It was fantastic. It was so good they wanted to go on the second time. I said, I lose my job. That's before I retired, like. Do you know?
And what's your own name?
Debbie Dunmarton.
I knew the poet Michael Hartnett.
Oh, sure, he's dead in my house.
Yeah.
My husband died 4 years ago, so I'm a widow. We won't start crying now.
Oh, God,
but yeah. He was a great friend of my husband. Yeah.
Michael was lovely.
Yeah,
he was a great man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But Paul now, my son,
yeah,
he put music to him. And
Michael's
he has CD,
phones.
Yeah.
Really?
I'd like to give you one of those, because in case a few left.
I'd love that.
But come here, how would I give you that CD?
Well, we could
call to the house.
We could call to the house.
Yeah, yeah.
Because we'd be going back now through
the
West.
Now, I've...
Yeah? I'll give you the... Bring the rent and the sense, say, I'm a monotonous foe. Thought the world was flat, pagan in the sunshine, no. The things that moved that night were neither dogs nor cats, but focus and dark-faced men. She nevertheless had fierce pride, but was sentenced in the end.
And that was Paul Dunworth from Newcastle West with his arrangement of Michael Hartnett's poem Death of an Irish Woman. You're listening to The County Measure, and we're in County Limerick. Kilmallock, this fine, busy town close to the Galty Mountains and Ballyhara. There's a new cycle route and an area of great natural beauty all around here. And again, an area with enormous history. You know, the poet Andreas McCrath is buried here, and his poem Slán na Mbeadh became a beautiful Seán Ó song.
The town of Kilmallock in South Limerick, close to the border with Cork, was one of Ireland's most important urban centres in late medieval times. The remains of the town's medieval walls are still clear. And then, standing out in its fine modernity and lightness, there's the town's new library, a hub of community and connection. An informative chat with the staff there sends us off in search of a town legend, Max Hennessy, supervisor on the town's community employment scheme.
You've landed in a fair old bastion here in Kilmallock, I can tell you. We're still in the same footprint inside in this town since the Norman times. We've never changed.
The town wall is, if you go out of the back of this place, you have the West Wall walkway here. And that wall is there since the 12th century. And the town of Kilmallock hasn't moved outside of this wall since the 12th century. So to say we're clannish would be a kind of a slight understatement. Yeah. But it makes us who we are as well, like, you know. Course, for yeah. a small town to achieve some of the things that we've had sporting-wise down through the years, it has been the kind of the key to what we have been. Like, we've always been inside the town walls, like, you know. We've never been sent back from whence we went up senior in 1956. We've beaten the biggest of them when they've been at the height, but when we've been least expected to win, and we've been in All-Ireland Club Finals in 92. We've won Munsters when we were least expect them. We've been doing great things, like, you know, junior levels, Munsters, all the way up along, like, not that we're counting, or that we hold it over on extra neighbours or anything, like, you know. That is the hottest topic of debate every single night of the week. No, it means nothing here to GA, like.
And I hear you're involved in the local drama group.
Oh, yeah. I'd be involved in everything pretty much around this town. We're stuck in the drama, we're stuck in the darkness into lies. Do you know anyone that's usually stuck in community stuff, they're stuck in everything, like, you know. So there's always something there, so it's always very active. Like, so the more we get involved, the more it stays active. I'm from the town, I love the town. Born and raised here, left here for a good bit of time and came back, and I kind of seen the value of community work, like, and I seen the value of what it can do and how it can enhance the place. My hometown is Kilmallock, so I said either put up or shut up, like. So I got involved about 10 years ago and I've been involved ever since.
Good town.
It's a great town. It's a fantastic town. You get a lot of bad press, but we don't see it. It's a lot of these social warriors that are behind this Facebook that are making this noise. We are living here, working here all day, every day. We don't see any of that rubbish that to be talking about on social media. It's a shame that the positive stuff doesn't get as much airtime as the negative stuff, like. Right, you're heading for the mountain, so once you get down into Brodie and past Brodie, you're onto the main road, sure, you'll be flying, flying there. Don't stop in Brodie, they'll take the hubcaps off the car. Come out and take the eye out of your head and come out and tell you you're born blind.
I'm Kevin Barry. I'm a writer based in County Sligo, originally from Limerick. When I was asked to write something about my home county, the first thing that came to mind were the visits I used to pay to an aunt of mine in the village of Ballingarry back in the early 80s. Among the little-known mountains of Limerick, Knockfearna Hill is the highest and the most storied, situated beyond the village of Ballingarry. It rises to some 951 feet, a prominent knuckle against the low grey skies and the estuarine rain. Also, it is a regal place, as it contains deep in its interior a fairy castle. And for many, many centuries, Knockfearna has radiated stories and legends and a palpable occult aura. My Aunt Annie lived in Ballingarry, and she needed no encouragement on the occult front. She was a practitioner of fish ogs, or folk cures, and by means of herbs and tinctures and curious spells, she took on the warts and septic throats of the vicinity. She had remedies for melancholy and bad backs. She would even cast her magic on those complaining of marital difficulties. When I'd be brought out from the city on Sunday afternoon spins to visit, there would often be local people in the corner of Hanny's kitchen whispering their complaints and receiving my aunt's sage advice in return. Her knowledge came from way, way back, and it may even have originated in the fairy chambers of Knockfearna. I remember those Sundays of cold spring, maybe in the March or April of the year, and the new, raw, feeble light crossing the fields, and the warm fog of coal smoke in Hanny's kitchen, and the dry humour and huskiness of her voice and her smoker's cough. She had spent a few decades in America, but it didn't knock a scrap of the magic out of her. And when she came back to her home place, she came back to her true calling in life, which was to heal and comfort in the way the long centuries had taught her. But I was an unimpressible 12-year-old, and I took the witchcraft of the kitchen entirely in my stride. In fact, I was rather bored by it all, so I would bring my Atari console along for the visit, plugging it into her television to play the ancient video game that featured two white lines for rackets and a slow-moving blob for a ball. John McGahan said once that the 20th century never existed in Ireland, that we went straight from the 19th into the 21st. Unbeknownst to myself, I may have occupied a cusp moment in this transition, playing my Atari at one end of the kitchen, with Hanny at her magic down the far end. And beyond the window, rising through the mist and rain, the looming spectre of Knockfearna Hill, its spirits calling out to both of us from its far interior.
You're listening to The County Measure. Limerick City is Ireland's Chicago, a friend said to me. So much that's unexpected. A twist of third or fourth city attitude and originality, a tang of life all of its own. It's a county and city of intersections. Viking, Norman, Garrett Barry and Cromwell's Ireton siege, Georgian power and wealth, Legion of Mary and Labour leader Jim Kemmy, Frank McCourt's narrative of poverty and rain, rugby and hurling, Blind Boy and Dolores O'Riordan. And here on O'Connell Street, Tom McNamara, longtime busker and local legend.
Do you ever hear the Hall of Fame?
Yes.
I got into that months ago in my old age.
A good man.
And the only other person I got into in Limerick, my second house, Dolores Riordan Cranberries.
Wonderful Dolores, yeah.
But the house I'm in, I'm not joking, you're not going to believe me, but it's haunted or something. I have the sixth sense. My brother-in-law died, like, you know. When the next thing I heard him talking to me, he was talking about something that happened years ago. Then I woke up one morning in my bed and I thought I saw a soldier standing just at the side of my bed, like, you know. And I do believe there was black and tans used to sleep in them places. Probably saw black and tan.
A little further up O'Connell Street, there's a striking and apt image of Limerick, a bronze sculpture of two sportsmen back to back, hurler and rugby player. And just opposite, an imposing new brown brick cathedral of a building to the game of rugby. Waiting to meet us just outside is Francis Fitzgerald, journalist with the Limerick Leader.
Hello.
Hiya, Francis. How are you? Nice to meet you. Vincent, lovely to meet you.
But I've always loved this street. I just see as well, you know, the bicycle lane.
Yeah.
Each side. Yeah. And the, see the dad going up there with the kid on his bike.
Absolutely. And, that's a new addition as well. Oh, yeah, yeah. No, it's great. Yeah. And even, you can't see from here now, but they've added bicycle lanes down by the river as well.
Mm-hmm.
So it makes it much more accessible.
Yeah.
Obviously, Limerick is growing its reach as a student city. And that's a massive thing for us at the moment.
Does the student population have a big impact on the city and the nightlife and the culture of the city?
100%. And it comes alive in September, I think. You know, the end of August comes to start of September when students start coming in. A lot of international students, which is great to see.
And of course, like everywhere else around the country, this is a year for elections
yes.
to the City Council, the County Council, and for the first time a directly elected mayor of Limerick.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting.
Yes.
It's going to be interesting, definitely. Yeah, we're getting ready for that now in June. It has the potential to be brilliant. One of the things I think that strikes me the most, we'll have mandated meetings with government every 4 months, or every quarter, sorry, which I just think is... We have our councillors, we have our TDs, they're great voices for Limerick, there's no doubt about that. But to have that connection with government, one person going in, speaking on behalf of Limerick people, our issues, what we want to talk about, I think that's going to be invaluable to the city and the county.
I must say, I've always had a great fondness for the city and the county indeed, but there's something about the shape of the city as well, and the Shannon, the river, you know, just
yes.
that the power of that, and that sense of a very, very ancient place and settlement, and all the history that's here.
Oh, it's gorgeous. I mean, you only have to see now, walking down O'Connell Street, all the different... You have the brand new Rugby Museum, you have the Opera Square, which is coming up down here now, which is going to be incredibly modern and new and futuristic. But then you also have the old Georgian buildings, you know, above the shops, the shop fronts here.
Oh, they're beautiful.
And it just mixes, I think it mixes so well. You know, it just shows the heritage and the history of the city. You know, the two coming together. It's just fabulous. You know, we remember our past, but we also look forward to the future. That's how I like to think of it.
You have to, yeah.
So this, as you can see, is going to be the library.
Okay, so an image of what the library would look like.
And you can kind of see outside here as well, the kind of open spaces and stuff like that. I don't know if you've seen the renderings for the building itself or the area, but it looks fabulous. It really does. It's not just... a new modern concrete brock. It's lovely design, as you can see, lovely flowy kind of open spaces outside as well, especially. So it's going to be gorgeous, hopefully, when it finishes. But even looking at the pictures and the designs of it now, it does look like it's going to be
great. Looks light and space, and it looks like there might even be plenty of trees in courtyards.
Exactly, even better.
Francis, was it Limerick, like a lot of places, gets a fair bit of bad press, you know, people focus on negative stories, and would you argue that that's too much of a focus in Limerick, that it should be counterbalanced by the better stories?
Yeah, listen, there's always going to be negatives, as you said, wherever you go in the world, not just Ireland, the world, there's always going to be negative stories. But I think a lot of people do have a focus on the negative, which is understandable. Limerick has been through a lot in the last 20 years. We had an unfortunate reputation at the start of the 2000s, but it's completely changed. And I think people are still in the mindset of what Limerick used to be instead of what it is now and what it's going to be. Not just what it is now, but what in the next 5-10 years, there's so much happening. I remember we went away last year, to Galway, and someone said to me, oh, you had to get out, did you, for the weekend? Do you know, that kind of a way. And I said, I can't wait to go home, I understand what you mean. There is definitely a touch of that, I think. But that's understandable, you know. I think we're famous for a lot of good things, we're famous for a lot of bad things, you know. There is no denying that.
Limerick was Ireland's first city of culture in 2014, but has long been a city of artistic and cultural wealth and originality. You never quite know what you'll encounter here.
We're looking for Jürgen.
Like the exploration of links between technology, music and art. The work of Jürgen Simpson, composer and director of the Centre for Computational Musicology and Computer Music at the University of Limerick.
Hello.
Hi.
Jürgen.
Vincent.
We meet him inside Ormston House, one of the cultural hubs of the city.
Great centre of culture that it is.
Yes. It is indeed. And we're the main street of the city, where it's unlikely that you'll find many, as experimental and vibrant cultural spaces in any city. We're in what was actually, I think, the first supermarket in Ireland, in Ormston House. And about a decade, I think, or a decade and a half ago, it was transformed from its many previous purposes into an art gallery. And so this, alongside LCGA, Limerick City Gallery of Art, which is the main municipal gallery, which distance-wise, say from a Dublin perspective, the distance from O'Connell Bridge, I guess, to the top of Grafton Street and Stephen's Green, and you can walk the entire span of those spaces between LCGA, the Hunt Museum across the road, and this, and you're there, and that's sort of the embrace of the city.
And really diverse work in each space.
Yes, there's always been a sense, I think, that it is a space where a lot more experimentation is a comfortable thing to be doing. You've had IVA here last year, which is Ireland's Biennale. Every 2 years, you know, it becomes the only Biennale for the visual arts here. But that sense of edginess and that sense of experimentation, I think, is sort of a defining quality of the city.
Of course, an edge, and of course, Limerick was Ireland's first city of culture in 2014.
It was a national city of culture at that point in time. It was the first city of culture. Yeah. Actually, a lot of initiatives actually kind of sprung from that year as well, and it was a great year in the sense of enabling a discussion about what the city could become and what it could do, and ideas which had already been in the air were able to flourish. You know, for my own part, I mean, I co-founded Light Moves Festival in 2014, which was enabled and is still running. We currently have actually an exhibition in LCGA Gallery. It definitely was a springboard for a lot of ideas.
Yeah. So you've seen things develop out of the City of Culture 9-10 years ago?
Yeah, for sure, yeah.
My name is Merle, and I'm a rap artist and music producer from Limerick. And I wrote this piece for the County Measure. It's called Crossroads.
I just wanna have a conversation. Can I buy a slot at your station? A little too left for field to be mainstream, but the last show proved that I'm decent. Finally feeling like I was destined for the big show, no wrestling. It's a long road I'm investing. Don't get me wrong, I ain't desperate. I'm doing what I love with my besties, and the forefathers have blessed me, paved me away through the water like Jesse. Trust me, I ain't gonna lie, no Jesse. I'm living my dream and I'm grateful, but we all know I'm part of the exceptions. I don't even have to wanna please you, just for a couple of rotations.
You know, coming from Limerick, a smaller city, and being a rap musician comes with its challenges. And sometimes, you know, some of the best arts come from those experiences, you know. So Crossroads is a song where I drew inspiration from just from living and kind of developing my craft in Limerick.
I'm wondering how many times I gotta play for exposure. I linger at the bottom of the poster. Your boys got wrenched like Rover. But you won't even afford me, it's over. I don't want to sound like a mourner. I'm all about a team and you know that. I wanna look ahead like a quarterback, but the only thing I see is a throwback. Promising myself I wouldn't do this. Said I'd rather quit, but the truth is, the longer you keep me on notice, the harder I be tightening my loose skin. But I'm changing my mind cause it's selfish. These words I hold on to, you'd find me in pursuit. Such heights to live up to, that's all. Just be tolerated. I acknowledge the sentiment, yet it's hard to read it. Give me the prick, no flame emoji while you hit it. I used to love to see the comment section decorated, but the numbers tell the same story as before I made it. Or so I thought when I was living what I televisioned and envisioned a better end to my past season. Still not fine of how they treat us in these places. I know this game almost on a first name basis. Trust a lot of lines, time for new races. Meaning sleeves up, stooping tile laces. This all's for the photo ops, don't it look good? Hashtag serve their purpose. Now they're like, who? How many of you really thought it too good to be true? But I'm a staple, you keep worrying about immunity, June. Attention, yo-yo, get a Frodo's and board and go-go.
You're listening to the County Measure, and we're in County Limerick. Limerick has long been a hub of movement, transport, connection out into the wide world. Shannon Foyne's port is the second largest port in Ireland. And in 1939, the first commercial flight from the US to Europe touched down here. Further east, a hub of connectivity of a different kind was established almost 100 years ago. Glenstall Abbey, a community of Benedictine monks and a centre of meditation and education. The Icon Chapel at Glenstall is a purpose-built, low-ceilinged, darkened space, a glow of muted gold and crimson from the exquisite images of Christ and Mary, suffering and salvation. It's a glimpse of the East and the Orthodox Christian churches of Ukraine and Russia, a place of great spiritual significance to many people.
So just on our way in here, we have St. Michael the Archangel. This is written here because we don't paint icons, we write them. It's written on the holy wood that is cedar wood. It's from 1700. And we have there St. Michael at the entrance appropriately. He is the one who protects us at the border of human habitation.
The chapel is quite plain. It's dark. The illumination then catches the colour of the icons. They're very beautiful. And you have these panels of
the
light.
The four evangelists. Are they? They're the four evangelists, yes. Yes, so you have the eagle, which is John. You have the young man, which is Matthew. You have the bull, which is Luke. And then you have the lion, which is Mark.
That's what's so beautiful in the place, is the light that comes
Absolutely.
From the icons and from the glass here. So from all the religious imagery gives off this light. How old would the oldest icon be?
Well, that's a very good question.
Roughly.
Because here we have an icon, which if you had come to us 5 years ago, I would have said this was from 1820. But the restorers came and cleaned it and took off the 19th century layer. Then they took off the 18th century layer. And then they took off the 17th century layer. So we're now down to the 16th century layer. There is a layer below this. But what this testifies to is that as people pray with icons, they burn candles before them and they cause burning marks. And then the icons are restored. And this one has been restored 5 times. So this icon is witness 500 years of continuous prayer. And it's still prayed. We pray with this icon every day. So it's this is a classic icon. The eyes are very wide and large. All the other senses, the nose, mouth and ears are very small because we don't use those in front of an icon. We're only using our eyes. And the icon projects out a space to which we enter. So it's a place of meeting.
So this can be a space of contemplation and comfort and connection and healing.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely, yes.
Of yeah. course, many people come here to Glenstall in a sort of retreat, you know, to
yes.
to pray, to think, to contemplate. I wonder what kind of people come to you, and is it mainly people from Ireland? Do you have international visitors?
We have a small number of international visitors. 90% would be from Ireland. We would have a lot of people who maybe have disconnected somewhat from the official church, and maybe people who are even kind of reassessing their lives for whatever reason, maybe a change of job, retirement, and then people tend to come back. So we also have welcomed here in the Abbey. We have 4 Ukrainians living with us, and we have another 3 working with us. And we're in at the moment trying to welcome a Palestinian from Gaza. And it's amazing, you know, what knowing even just a small number of people from another land does. It really helps you connect in a very special way. And I knew nobody from Georgia until the Georgians started coming here. And, you know, they're marvellous. They're great and they're great crack. And they're cute tours as well, like ourselves. But that's all right. I mean, we can accept that. So let's be honest. And they're no different to ourselves in that regard. But no, there's something very special about breaking down the barriers.
Limerick is unsung is a mantra I've heard many times, and there's truth in it. But think of the wealth of song and music we find here. So many evocative places, names and histories threaded through song titles and tunes. Sean South from Garryowen, Percy French's from Colliher, Shanna Golden with its sweet air and haunting lament, a world of music and musicians. At Carrickonlish I meet one of Limerick's finest, Ilan Piper, Mickey Dunn, who comes from a noble line of traveller musicians and whose two daughters, Breed and Niamh, carry the flame of music.
Mickey Dunn, it's lovely to meet you. And, of course, a great tradition of music in your family. I remember Mick Maloney, another great musician, saying to me that he heard your uncles playing on the street in Limerick. And he said it stopped him in his tracks. And I think it was one of the things that really led him into music.
Well, Mick was a great friend of mine. I remember one time he said that the first banjo player he heard was my Uncle Christy. He said he was outside Woolworths in Limerick and he heard this banjo ringing all around the place. And fair play to Mick, no matter where he went. And he was a professor in New York in America, and he always recognised the Dunns as being a huge influence on him. And that means an awful lot to me.
But Mickey, your family, the Dunns then were travellers, and your uncle's great musicians and your father great musician.
Yeah, my father played the fiddle, also played the pipes. But the pipes were too expensive for him. They were surviving on what they made on the street, you know. But that's the way they live, Vincent. They travelled around the whole country in a barrel top wagon, and they were probably the first professional musicians, traditional players like the likes of Johnny Dorn and Felix Dorn and the Dunns, and that's the way they lived. That's how we were reared. You know,
and you were one of a good big family, and then you settled in Limerick.
Yes,
in the
city. There was 14 of us. There was 17 of us actually, but 14 survived. 7 boys and 7 girls. My mother wasn't from that background at all. My mother was. I didn't discover this, Vincent, until later in life. We often wondered why she would take off with a traveller, like, do you know, and her father, my mother's father, was a soldier in the First World War. And he got badly wounded. He was traumatised after it, and apparently he wasn't the easiest fella to live with. But the same could be said for any of us, do you know, if we saw what he saw. And we came to the conclusion that the first chance she got, she got out of it. And she ran off. And it was the total tale of the whistling gypsy rover. She ran off with him. And they were together and loved each other till the day they died.
Well, love knows no barriers.
That's the truth. Yeah. They were forever together.
Yeah. So a great legacy for you and for all your siblings.
Yes. I was very fortunate in a lot of ways.
And of course then music opened doors for you and carried you into other realms of life anyway.
Vincent, I couldn't have been more lucky. Jeez, I travelled the world, and you know, I'm not bragging about this or anything like, but I went to places and I wouldn't have even dreamed of it, like Costa Rica. What would I go to Costa Rica for? I had to probably over there to play at a festival, right? New Zealand. I could name them all out. Canada, America, all over the place. I was only in Patagonia, would you believe it, there, before COVID.
Music brought you around the world.
Yeah.
And it's lovely to be here.
And you're more than welcome. Call again.
I will.
I'll give you something to eat the next time.
Right, Sunday morning in the lovely laneways and hills around Loch Gur, one of the most important archaeological sites in Ireland. And I'm fascinated by the history that's connected to here, human settlement going back to about 3000 BC, Ringforts, the largest Ringfort Grange, the largest Ringfort in Ireland, Cranoaks, all kinds of megalithic markers and remains in the landscape.
I've come here to Loch Gur to meet the celebrated singer, theologian and interfaith minister Noreen Ní Rian, who grew up not far from here.
Noreen,
lovely to meet you.
She loves this place and all that the landscape holds and reveals.
well, there's 1,000 sites, sacred sites, in 5 mile radius, where kind of history and mythology meet, do you know? And they become blended into one. So at one time you're talking about the third Earl of Desmond, Garrod Éireann, lived in 14th century. Another time you're talking about Anya, the goddess who lives underneath the lake there. Really, it's wonderful in Ireland about where our imagination takes over and history becomes part of, you know, creation story or whatever.
But it becomes history in a way, and vice versa.
And vice versa, yeah.
And you spent part of your childhood very close to here.
I did. Just as you're coming in there, there's a little cottage. And my parents rented that for the first 4 years of my life. But they always told a story about one time they came up here with my father's two friends, and they were skating on the lake. And my mother was kind of feisty, and she, anyway, went too far, and she fell down into the water. And they had to pull her up by the hair, the three of them, yeah. And she always felt, though, she said, that the pull of Anya, that Anya was pulling her down.
She had three good, strong men to pull back.
And I wouldn't be here at all, for God's sake.
Noreen, of course, you know, these days we remember St. Bridget, but there are other female saints to remember, and especially here in Limerick, I think there's Aoife is a good Limerick saint.
Absolutely, and a great woman to inspire us to follow our dreams, because didn't she follow the deer to a place until the deer stopped, quite like the three astrologers, kings at the Epiphany, and where they stopped, she built her monastery. Garrod Éireann, as we mentioned, he was a poet. He was the third Earl of Desmond, and he lived in that castle there. You can't see it. It's
through the trees.
Through the trees, exactly right. You can't see it there. But he was a poet, and he would write in Old Irish, in English, and in French, because, of course, the family were French. But he wrote this poem in 1370 when he was in prison. Speak not ill of womankind. Speak not ill of womankind. 'Tis no wisdom if you do. You that fault in woman find, I would not be praised of you. Sweetly speaking, witty, clear, tribe most lovely to my mind. Blame of such I hate to hear. Speak not ill of womankind. Bloody treason, murderous act, not by women were designed. Bells o'erthrown nor churches sacked. Speak not ill of womankind. Bishop, king upon his throne, primate skilled in to loose and bind, sprung of women, every one. Speak not ill of womankind.
We leave Limerick in the light of spring, all the old powers and energies alive and present. Everywhere you go in city and county, you find memorable conversation, unforgettable people, splinters of history and glimpses of innovation. There's practical hope to be found here, more harnessed light for the future.